Wednesday, May 10th, 2017, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we talk sports once a week. We do it every single Wednesday, and we do it a little bit different than most sports shows out there. We don't really do the arguments, don't really do the hot takes. You know, we just simply look at some of the top stories, try to apply some actual common sense to them. You know, every once in a while, we'll look back at some sports history, try to make you laugh once or twice. Now, if you'd like to recommend the podcast, we would appreciate that so much. Just let your friends, let your family, let your coworkers know. They can subscribe to the podcast pretty much anywhere that podcasts are hosted. iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Republic, Google Play, Audio Boom. Head over to blogtalkradio.com. They've got every single episode over there. Now, let's say you'd like to share the podcast, but you don't really want to talk to people. I completely sympathize with you. I totally understand. I don't want to go to the cube next door and tell some guy I work with to listen to the podcast. That's okay. You don't have to do that. Just click that little share button wherever you listen and send your friend or that clown down the hall, whoever it might be, a link to the show. Send it via email, send it via text, however you want to send it. It's kind of easier than having to go, you know, have a conversation with people. We don't like really doing that these days, do we? And sometimes that just makes it easier. Plus, if they're technically challenged, you kind of take the hard part out of it for them and make it a little bit easier for them to listen to the Daily Dose. You can go over to our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. There are new articles that go up there every single week, and we do put a link to the podcast over there as well. This week, article went up about LeVar Ball, about the big baller brand. Of course, those shoes came out. Charging $495 a pop for those shoes. Discuss that a little bit on that article. $220 if you want the flip-flops. If you just want the slides, you can get them for $220. You know, one thing, and we're not going to talk much about that, because I've told you, LeVar Ball to me is Kardashian news. I don't really care. It's fake news. I could care less. I understand why he's doing what he's doing. I get it. I really do. He's going to charge a ton. If he sells 100 pairs, he makes a decent amount of money. Here's one problem that LeVar Ball could be facing. Who buys shoes like that? Who actually buys those? It's kids, right? Kids are who buy the shoes. What kid can afford $495? The only people that can afford that is the 50-year-old men that are like made. They can afford that. The kids can't afford that. It might not be the best business model. But if you head over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com, you can check out our article on that whole situation and see what you think. Also, make sure that you stop by our podcast network, rogueintel.com. The Daily Dose is a proud member of the Rogue Intel Podcast Network, and they've got a number of other podcasts over there you're going to like. Go check out a few of the new shows that are coming up on the network at rogueintel.com. Going to get addicted. You're going to download them every single week. If you've got a question, you've got a comment, maybe you need some advice. We have given advice before. We have given some relationship advice before. Couple times we've had people write in, ask about some relationship advice. We are glad to dole out that advice anytime. Want to reach out to us? Hit us on email at dailydosesports@gmail.com. That is DALYDOSE, dailydosesports@gmail.com. You can also find us over on Twitter or Facebook. If you follow us on Twitter or Facebook, you will get updates and links to the articles and to the podcast. Today on the show, I've got a number of things for you. Going to be talking some NFL. Few things to look at now that the NFL draft is over. The NBA playoffs are now in the conference semifinals, and there are some people in the NBA playoffs that are getting things done. And of course, the other side of that, there are some people that are not getting things done. We're going to look at both of those today. Plus, got a little NHL, maybe some Major League Baseball, and of course, a weekly staple of the show. You have to make sure that you stick around for the Daily Dose Top 5. You never know which way that is going to go. I'm not sure if you've noticed this. You may not have noticed, but do you realize that Washington, D.C. is turning into Cleveland? No. I don't mean that the Washington Channel is going to catch fire. Nothing like that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm just referring to the pro sports situation in our nation's capital. Folks, it's not good. It's not pretty. And now that the Cleveland Cavaliers have actually won a championship, we've got a few cities out there that are up for the longest championship drought. Of course, a place like Milwaukee. Milwaukee hasn't won anything since 71, but Milwaukee doesn't have the NHL. Cincinnati doesn't have a championship since 1990. But they don't have the NBA. They don't have the NHL. Of course, Minneapolis has the Vikings. They've got the Twins. They've got the Timberwolves. And they got the Minnesota Wild back in 2000. They haven't won any sort of a title recently, but the Timberwolves and the Wild, it's not like those are really long-suffering fan bases. Like, they just kind of got here, right? So I'm not going to put Minneapolis in there either. However, Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, has all four major teams. And they haven't won anything in over 25 years. And honestly, they really haven't been all that close. Well, they're close for a while. But then when we get into the postseason, we kind of know how it's going to end up for the city of Washington, don't we? Let's take a look at baseball. Yes, the Washington Nationals have only been in Washington since 2005. Remember, they changed from being the Montreal Expos. So it's not like Nats fans have been suffering for all that long, but they have actually been suffering because it seems like every year the Nationals are a contender. But then they fall short in the postseason. In 2012, they finished with the best record in the National League. Lost to the Cardinals in the divisional playoffs. In 2014, best record in the National League. Lost to the Giants in the NLDS. Last year, they had the second best record in the National League, and they couldn't get past that tricky NLDS again. It's not that they can't get to the postseason. They make it. They can't even get out of the divisional round, though. This year, right now, if you were looking at Major League Baseball, and we haven't done our Major League Baseball preview. Probably should do that at some point. I really need to get on that. That's on me. That's my bad. Do you really care, though? Honestly, look at yourself in the mirror and say, I've been dying to know what's going to happen in baseball. You don't care that much, do you? Yes, we'll do it. We'll do it. John, you need to come on here and do the baseball preview with me because you know I'm not going to do it. A little shout out to our boy out in the Inland Empire. He may have to come on here and talk some baseball, see if he can keep me awake while he does it. Anyways, what I was saying is that if you were looking at Major League Baseball right now, there are two teams, honestly, that stand out right now. Right now, probably the top two teams in Major League Baseball are probably the New York Yankees. Hey, looking strong. They looked strong last year. They were really coming on down the stretch. And the Washington Nationals. Nationals are 21-10, something like that. Rolling along. They've got a deep lineup. Look pretty good. Are you really expecting much from them? Or you look at them and say, yeah, they'll probably fade in the playoffs. That's what Washington teams do, right? Switch over to the NHL. The Washington Capitals. They have finished first in their respective division 10 different times since 1974. That's pretty good. They've made it to the postseason 26 different times. They even made it to the Stanley Cup Finals back in like the late 90s, 97, 98. And this season, they were the best team in the NHL. And once again, things aren't going so well right now for the Washington Capitals. It's kind of having that familiar look of, yeah, they might not get it done in the postseason yet again. Now, I'll admit that the way that the NHL has changed this seeding situation, the fact that Washington is playing Pittsburgh now instead of the next round, a little bit odd, a little bit stupid. We did discuss that, but it looks like Washington's probably going to come up short yet again. Let's shift over to the NFL. The Washington Redskins, they've won 3 Super Bowls, but they haven't won a Super Bowl since back in 1991. And let's be real honest. And this is going to sound weird when I say it, but I want you to think about this a little bit. The Washington Redskins might be the most dysfunctional team currently in the NFL. Yes, worse than the Browns. Yes, worse than the Jets. You pick a team. Hey, they're right there. Washington's right there. That's saying a lot. Since 91, they've only even made the playoffs 6 times, even though, honestly, every year, they're loaded with talent. They go out and they get players. They go out and they sign big-name free agents. The problem with Washington starts at the top. The ownership under Daniel Snyder has been completely bizarre, and the management of this team rarely ever makes sense. Currently, Washington's in a battle to try to sign their quarterback, Kirk Cousins, to a long-term deal. The problem, of course, he says he won't sign a long-term deal as long as Bruce Allen is the team president. You'll remember, it was just back in March, they fired the general manager, Scott McLuhan, just 2 years into his 4-year deal, and then they told everyone It was because McLuhan was secretly drinking on the job. He might have a drinking problem. There seemed to be something wrong with him. He wasn't getting his work done. And now it's kind of come out that doesn't sound like any of that was true. Like, it doesn't seem like they have any evidence he was drinking on the job. Doesn't sound like he was failing to do his job. The Washington Redskins are a mess. Finally, in the NBA, we have the Washington Wizards, who did win a championship back in 78, back when like Jimmy Carter was in office, and they were still called the Washington Bullets. Since then, it's been almost 40 years, 16 postseason appearances, and a ton of disappointments. And right now, again, does it look like the Washington Wizards are anywhere near winning a championship? No, it doesn't. Not really. Doesn't look like that at all. I'm telling you, the city of Washington, D.C. has become Cleveland. Aww. And I don't expect any success anytime soon. Okay, last week, University of Alabama football coach Nick Saban got another raise. His annual pay is going to be $7.1 million per year for the next 2 years. And also, he got a $4 million bonus just for signing. Just for signing, he got the bonus. Pretty good deal. Of course, the first reaction in most all of the sports world, if you turn on any of the sporting networks, any of the sports news, any of that kind of stuff, the first reaction to this news was exactly the same. How does he get this huge pay raise? But the kids that are playing for him, they don't get anything. You know, if he just divided that signing bonus money up, he could afford to give each player like $50,000. Now, that sounds like super fair. Sounds really honorable. And why on earth can't we do something like this, darn it? Well, for starters, because that's not how it works. And that's not going to work. See, according to the NCAA's Title IX Fairness Act, I'm going to read a line from the Fairness Act. You can put this together. No one shall be denied the benefits of or be subjected to discrimination under any education program or activity receiving federal financial assistance. So, if that is the case, that means we can't just pay the football players. We've got to pay everyone. We've got to pay basketball. We've got to pay baseball. We have to pay lacrosse, gymnastics, field hockey, cross country. That, at the University of Alabama at least, is about right around 500 athletes. That's about $8,000 each. Not bad, but not every university is the University of Alabama. Not every university can afford to do this. So I know when they're talking on the big sports networks and they're saying how noble it would be and how awesome that would be and how is it that he's getting this raise but these kids aren't getting anything, it's stupid. Look, I realize, I understand, I completely sympathize. There is probably something that needs to be done. The adults are making all the money. The players are getting a little. They're getting an education. And hey, let's be real clear. They do get some perks. But straight cash? No, they don't get any. Even though a lot of the money that's being made is being made directly on their name. But trying to act like this Saban money could fix all the woes of college football, it's ludicrous. It's not that well thought out. I know people look at this and they think they've really got a hot take. That's not a hot take, folks. It's stupid. I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. I do think kids should be able to go straight to the professional leagues out of high school if they would like, if they are capable of doing so. If you can make it, hey, go make it. But I don't know how to pay these athletes, aside from like these cheap meal stipends, because it starts to become unfair. See, football and basketball make all the money. But under Title IX, rowing and like tennis, they have to get paid too. I don't know how you do that. And I don't know how you say, well, look, you're the quarterback at Texas A&M, so you get this paycheck, but you're the backup rower at Penn State, so you only get this check. I don't know how you do that. Stop acting like when these college coaches get paid, somehow it should go to the athletes. You can't do it. They're going to have to rewrite it. They're going to have to break that system up the way it stands right now because it doesn't make any sense and it doesn't work. Speaking of dumb sports takes, and there are a lot of them out there, we saw that the New Orleans Saints signed Adrian Peterson. Of course, Adrian Peterson has had some health problems. He's had some knee issues. The Denver Broncos signed Jamaal Charles. Jamaal Charles hasn't been healthy in a while. In like the past 3 years, maybe, he's played like 30-some games. Hasn't been healthy. The Oakland Raiders went and signed Marshawn Lynch. He's been out of football. And so then after we get these signings, we get the obligatory, hey, these guys have not played that many snaps recently due to injury. They're going to be well rested when they come back. These three teams really got a steal. That's not exactly how that works. I know that's what we always say. They've been sitting on the sideline. They've been recharging. They've been resting. Now they are 100% ready. Let me explain something that seems like it would be simple, but apparently it's not, because all this is floating around all the time in the sports world. Hey, Marshawn didn't play for the last 2 years. He's really going to be ready to go. Is he? Here's a little bit of a comparison. Let's say for a minute, you've got a 65 Mustang GT. Okay? Nice car, right? Especially nice back in 65. But now, that car's a little older. It has some mileage on it. It's got a leaky transmission. The engine tends to overheat. The alignment's a little bit off. It pulls a little to the right. The door hinges squeak. The tires are worn out. So you go park your Mustang in a garage for 2 years. You don't drive it. You just store it. And maybe you even do a little work to it. You fix the transmission. Doesn't leak anymore. You put in a new radiator. It's not overheating anymore. Maybe you even buy some new tires. When you pull it out to drive it, will it run? Yeah, hopefully. I would think so. It should, right? Will it be brand new? No, it will not. Is there probably some structural rust in the frame of the body? Is there probably a clutch that is on the verge of going out? Yes, most likely there is. Putting an NFL running back in storage while he gets his knee surgically repaired doesn't necessarily mean he's brand new. He's got a lot of miles on him, and he hasn't been hit or raced in a while. If you think these three running backs are going to return in prime condition, it's probably wishful thinking. Now, maybe if you nurse them along, you don't drive them very much, you don't drive them real hard, maybe you can get some crucial miles out of them. Otherwise, they're just going to blow up. See, unlike a fine wine, running backs do not get better with age. Last week, of course, we discussed the 2017 NFL draft with Dylan Brooks. We looked at a few winners and a few losers. Today, I want to do something just a little bit different, tiny bit different. When some of these teams select certain players, it is a direct shot at some of the current people that are on their team. The ownership, the management clearly feel like these guys maybe need a bit of a nudge, maybe even need to be pushed out. It is basically put up or shut up time for some players in the NFL. And the bad news is, even if they're really, really good, it still may not matter. Here's a few players in the NFL, few big name players that are officially on notice.
Yeah, boy.
Okay. Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Alex Smith. We talked about this a little bit last week. In his career, Alex Smith has won 58% of the games he started. In Kansas City, his record as a starter is 41-20. No, he doesn't put up huge numbers, but he does seem to produce in the win column. So it had to just suck for Alex Smith when the Chiefs trade away three different picks to go get Texas Tech quarterback Patrick Mahomes. Head coach Andy Reid obviously wants that gunslinger. He obviously wants that Brett Favre type. He thinks he has that guy in Mahomes. Here's the scary part for the Chiefs. I'm going to throw this out there. Mahomes, honestly, he needs a redshirt season. He may need two. I saw him play a few times this year. He is not NFL ready right now. Let's get that on record. Let's just say, just for fun, let's just say Alex Smith struggles a little bit this year. What do you think the locals in Kansas City are going to do? They are going to be screaming like maniacs for that rookie to get on the field. Now, if you're Alex Smith, you can't be pleased that they went and drafted your replacement instead of getting you some help. And if you are other players on the team, you can't be that happy either. Look, I'm trying to win now. I'm not trying to wait for this young moron to grow up. I want to win. I want to go get a ring. The Kansas City Chiefs are going to be very interesting to watch this season. We may see a soap opera. If Smith plays well and he overcomes it, hey, the Chiefs should be in the thick of another AFC West title. They'll be right there. But if he struggles, this team could go sideways really quick. Either way, Alex Smith, you are officially on notice.
Yeah, boy.
I don't know what that means. Another guy on notice. Chicago Bears quarterback Mike Glennon. Hey, the Bears were done with Jay Cutler. Sick of his crappy record. Sick of his lack of production. Remember back when they got him from Denver? And they made that trade and sent Kyle Orton out here. And Denver sent them Jay Cutler. There were people in Chicago like, yeah, he's the Messiah. This is our savior. Well, I mean, if he's a savior that doesn't really save you and also doesn't really care if he saves you, then I guess maybe. Cutler in Chicago was exactly average. He went 51-51 while he was there. Didn't do anything in the postseason. Barely ever made the postseason. So when his contract was up, the Bears let him walk. They went looking for a replacement. Of course, now Cutler apparently is going to go into the announcing booth. Don't know how that's going to go. I could see him being a decent announcer from the standpoint of he won't care what anyone says about him. I also can't really see him preparing, though, because he doesn't care what you think about him. Anyways, back to what I was saying. The Bears let him go. They go looking for his replacement. It wasn't a huge offseason for free agent quarterbacks, but the Bears went after the best that they thought they could get. They went and signed three-year veteran Mike Glennon. Now, Mike Glennon is 5-13 as a part-time starter in Tampa. So the Bears gave him a three-year, $45 million deal. $45 million for 5-13? What does 6-12 get you? Like $50 million? It's amazing. It isn't all good news for Mr. Glennon, though. Because then less than 2 months later, they traded three picks to move up one single spot in the NFL draft, and they went and selected North Carolina quarterback Mitchell Trubisky. Look, I'm okay with you going and signing Glennon. It's way too much money. But he's only 27. If you think Mike Glennon is the guy, go get him. But then to trade away some picks to go get Trubisky too, that I don't understand. And let's be real honest. The city of Chicago is where quarterbacks go to die. Name the last, reasonably, I'm not asking for hugely successful, name the last even reasonably decent quarterback in Bears history. What are you going to say, Rex Grossman? I mean, I guess you can go back to Jim McMahon. I do think Jim McMahon was a decent quarterback, but that's going back to the late 80s. I'm going to go ahead and say not one, but both of these guys will probably suck because that's Chicago. It's just science, folks. Either way, Mike Glennon, you are on notice.
Yeah, boy.
Again, I don't know why we're playing that. Okay, another quarterback on notice. Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback Blake Bortles. Oh, wait a second. The Jags didn't even select a quarterback. Why would Bortles be on notice? I'll tell you why. Because, quite simply, the Jaguars are kind of running out of excuses. That's why. See, Jacksonville drafted Blake Bortles with the third overall pick in the 2014 NFL draft. Ahead of Teddy Bridgewater. Oh, this one's going to hurt more. Ahead of Derek Carr. In his career, Bortles has thrown 69 touchdowns and just 51 interceptions. Not horrible. In the world of basically tying defenses' hands behind their backs and then trying to make them play, not great, but you get my point. Not, like, horrible. The problem is that Blake Bortles' career record as a three-year starter in Jacksonville, he's done okay touchdowns and interceptions-wise, sort of. But his record as a starter, 11-34. Now, folks, I'm going to be completely transparent. I've never played professional football. No. Seriously. I have just 11 less wins with the Jaguars than Blake Bortles does. That's not that many. Like, I'm only 11 behind. He's been there for 3 years. I've never played pro football. I'm only 11 back. Like, one good season, I could catch him. So first, Jacksonville was like, well, he doesn't have any help on defense. So they went and signed guys like Malik Jackson, Jalen Ramsey. It's helped a little. Their defense is, I guess, better. And they gave him some more offensive weapons. He's got Allen Robinson. He had Julius Thomas for a few years. TJ Yeldon, Chris Ivory were in the backfield. Now, the Jacksonville Jaguars have gone and drafted LSU running back Leonard Fournette. But you're starting to run out of excuses, aren't you? I mean, at some point, doesn't Jacksonville just have to look and say, hey, you know what? We've made a huge mistake. Blake Bortles, you're not the guy. I don't know who is the guy, but we might have to go get somebody else. But for right now, Blake Bortles, you are on notice.
Yeah, boy!
Why are we playing that? What does Flavor Flav have to do with these guys being on notice? Like, that doesn't even... I don't know. Moving forward. Cincinnati Bengals running back Jeremy Hill. You know, Hill's been pretty solid since he got drafted 3 years ago out of LSU. He averages over 900 yards of rushing per season. He has scored 29 touchdowns on the ground. He's a decent receiver out of the backfield. He catches 21 passes a year. Yet apparently, the Bengals aren't too big on Jeremy Hill because they spent their 9th overall pick on Oklahoma running back Joe Mixon. Yes, that same Joe Mixon that clocked that girl in the face that we all saw. I mean, Jeremy Hill has to be like, all I've done is play hard. All I've done is do my job. Why are you going and getting Joe Mixon? If you really like guys that abuse women, don't forget, I did plead guilty to having carnal knowledge of a minor back in 2012. I don't even know if I know what that means. Like, what more can Jeremy Hill do to be a member of this Bengals team? He's doing all he can do. Do you need him to go punch somebody? Do you need him to go beat up a woman? That's what I'm asking. Do you need Jeremy Hill to go beat up a woman? Because he'll do it. You just tell him, and Jeremy Hill will do it. He's trying to make this team, and you're going and getting Joe Mixon instead? Come on. Jeremy Hill, you're officially on notice.
Yeah, boy!
Okay, stop playing that. We don't need that. Last players that are officially on notice. And this one might hurt a little bit more than any of them, I'm going to be honest. Because, yes, the Oakland Raiders' pass defense was not very good last year. It hasn't been real great for a while. Last year, they allowed over 257 yards per game through the air. The year before that, it was actually 259. So look for the positives, Raiders. It came down 2 yards. It was getting better. But the Raiders decided to use their 24th overall pick on Ohio State cornerback Garyon Conley, despite the fact that he has a rape accusation that came out against him last month. Now, originally, Conley said nothing whatsoever took place between him and his accuser in a Cleveland hotel room. But then the DNA evidence came out that something actually did happen. And then the story changed, and he said, well, something happened, but it was totally consensual, and it wasn't really sex, it was just something. I don't even know what any of this means anymore. Honestly, I wish I were joking. I'm not. I mean, you can look it up for yourself. Or you could just believe me because I don't really have any reason to lie. But anyways, now that the police back in Cleveland are trying to sort out the sordid details of this hideous story, we have to kind of look at the football side of it. And the football side of it is that the Oakland Raiders decided it would make more sense to draft this disaster, this mess, than to go with either Sean Smith or David Amerson. Look, we'd rather take our chances that this guy might beat this rape charge than keep either one of you. Sean Smith and David Amerson, you have also officially been put on notice.
Yeah, boy!
Stop playing that. Okay, hey, we need to talk some NBA playoffs. Who is getting it done and who isn't? Plus, we do have our Daily Dose Top 5. You have to make sure that you stick around for that. We will be right back.
Table Reads, now part of the Rogue Intel Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, this is Trevor, and I'm here with Sean.
Hi.
And we're from Table Reads. Do you know what Table Reads is?
No.
Exactly.
I don't know what it is.
Even Sean doesn't know what it is, and he created it. Well, Sean, if you had to guess, which clearly you do, what do you think Table Reads is?
I would think it's a show about a fat guy and a skinny guy reading some bad scripts that never got to be made into movies.
Experience the worst Hollywood has to offer with readings of the scripts you never wanted.
You know, the thing I love about you, Sean, ever since we were kids, is you're always good at guessing. You nailed it.
Yay!
Yay!
Table Reads. Every Tuesday, right here on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network, or visit TableReadsPodcast.com.
Yeah, every time I go to get new body armor or some more drones, I always go to Amazon. But I don't just go to any Amazon. I go to RogueIntel.com/Amazon. So this way I can help out my favorite podcast with every purchase I make. And I know I purchase a lot. Get to the chopper now!
Movies, anime, comics, video games, and pop culture. These are but mere playthings for the manliest beings in all of podcasting history, the powerful Nerdcast. hosted by the gurus of geekdom, Corey and Christian. Join them each week to discuss all things nerd culture, everything from Star Wars to Dragon Ball Z, and everything in between. Find the powerful Nerdcast on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network at rogueintel.com.
You know, a pretty big story did come out last week in the world of Major League Baseball. I'm sure you saw this. It was on all the networks. It was everywhere. Apparently, there seemed to be some racists living in the city of Boston.
What?
Now, I'm just going to wait for just a second for you to regain consciousness after I dropped a truth bomb like that. Okay, you back? You feeling better? All right, get back in your seat. Settle in. Listen up. Yes, apparently, some moronic fans in Boston were yelling some racial slurs at Baltimore Orioles outfielder Adam Jones. Who knew the city of Boston was so racist? Besides, you know, everyone. Like, everyone knows that, right? When a good player comes out in college basketball, like right now, when you're thinking of Grayson Allen, where could Grayson Allen end up? You know, he'd be pretty good in Boston. Another white guy. Are we really going to be shocked that there's racists in Boston? Come on. Stop acting like that's news. It's not news. Now, I don't want to trivialize this. If this happens, if you see this happen, if you hear this happen, these people should be reported. They should be ejected. They should be banned from coming to games. Having said that, and again, I'm not saying any of that should happen. It should never happen, ever, bar none. Having said that, you know, I've heard some hideous things said at sporting events. I remember sitting right next to, I wasn't in, but I remember sitting right next to the Colorado student section, and I heard some of their fans, a lot of them had to be minors, yelling things at Nebraska players that are not only illegal in most states, but honestly, they're probably pretty much physically impossible. It's a tad odd to me that yelling things like that are acceptable. We draw some strange lines in the world of sports, don't we? Like, you can tell me things my mother has done all you want. You can say you've done certain things to my wife. Everyone is fine with that. And I'm like 95% positive that you didn't do the things you say you did. That's okay. Here's the thing. And again, I'm not saying that we should be okay with the racial slurs either. None of this stuff should be allowed. Here's the rule. And I know what people say. I paid for this ticket. I can yell whatever I want. Well, you can to a degree. But buying a ticket to the movie does not mean that you can yell fire, does it? So here's the new rule. If the player hears you and you yell something like that, the player is allowed to come up and punch you in the face. Like, wouldn't that just settle everything? And I'm not saying like a brawl. I'm not saying like we don't need the malice at the palace. But hey, we all heard you say that. We're going to send him down to the field. Hey, yeah, you. Yeah, seat 34. No, you. Go down out on the field, and then we all get to sit and watch a fight. Hey, that's going to be pretty entertaining. We send this one fan out, and he's yelled things at Adam Jones, and Adam Jones gets to come over and deal with you mano-a-mano, face-to-face? Now we've got something, folks. That has to be the new rule. And you can't do it every game, but if we did it just a few times, it would stop so much of the nonsense. We wouldn't have this stuff anymore. If we just said, we heard you, everybody saw it was you, whether it's a racial slur, whether it was just something hideous that you said about this guy's family, hey, you said it, we heard you, you go out on the field, and we're going to deal with this right here and right now. And I'm not saying you can't boo. I'm not saying you can't be clever and yell some things at the opposing team. That's not what I'm saying. But when you go personal, when you go racial, we should be able to put you out on the field and sort things out. It would settle so many things. We could fix a lot of problems in the stands if we just did that. And also, slow down on everyone acting shocked that Boston is racist. Everyone knew that. We've been saying it on the Daily Dose for 3 years almost that Boston is racist. Come on. Okay, so the second round of the NBA playoffs are actually going pretty quickly. Of course, the Cleveland Cavaliers swept the Toronto Raptors. The Boston Celtics and the Washington Wizards are in a dogfight. Not sure how that's going to end up. Golden State Warriors, just too much for the Utah Jazz. Too many weapons. And the San Antonio Spurs and the Houston Rockets might be headed towards Game 7 at the rate things are going. But what I wanted to talk about today was I wanted to discuss some of the people in the playoffs right now that are getting it done and some of the other people who maybe are not getting it done. Because we're seeing both. And when you get to this level of the playoffs, when you get to the postseason, lights are a little brighter, crowds a little more intense, everything matters that much more, every possession is starting to matter. Who's getting it done? Who's not getting it done? First off, getting it done. I'm going to give a getting it done to Washington Wizards guard John Wall. Hey, last week, we set an over-under on Wall that he would score 24 points per game. Both Dylan Brooks and I bet the over. So far, John Wall is scoring 27 a game after it looked initially like Boston might blow Washington out. Wall has them right back in the series. Here is my concern for John Wall. He can score, seems like, almost when he wants to. He's got to cut those turnovers, though. And when he was in Boston, he was turning the ball over right and left. If he cuts the turnovers, keeps the scoring, Washington may give Boston a game 7 at least. I still think the Celtics have too much. I think if it goes back to Boston for a game 7, those racist fans will yell at Wall and get him all flustered. Okay, moving forward. Who is not getting it done? This is a tough one, but I'm going to give a not getting it done to San Antonio Spurs guard Tony Parker's quadricep tendon. You know, Parker had played so well in that last series against the Memphis Grizzlies. He was looking young. He was looking like, man, Tony Parker, he might carry San Antonio. Yes, we know this is Kawhi Leonard's team now, but Tony Parker was playing well. And then his 34-year-old quad tendon decided, I think I'll go ahead and announce my retirement from basketball effective now. Now, San Antonio has to get some pretty big contributions from some other guys. From some guys coming off the bench, from some guys that aren't used to performing at this kind of level. They are saying Tony Parker might be out nearly a full year. They're saying he could be done. This is similar to like that Achilles tendon, a quad tendon. I hope Tony Parker is not finished. I enjoy watching him play. I know it's not flashy, but it is effective. It is efficient. Hope Tony Parker comes back, but a not getting it done, definitely we have to give one to Tony Parker's quad because it is not getting anything done. Getting it done. Stay in that same series. I'm going to give a getting it done to backup Houston Rockets guard Eric Gordon. Now, he's not putting up the huge numbers, but Eric Gordon is averaging about 15 points a game, and people aren't really paying that much attention to him because they're all watching James Harden, and I understand that. James Harden, whether you love him, whether you hate him, you are going to watch him. But keep in mind that James Harden is averaging about 10 assists per game. A lot of those assists are going to Eric Gordon. He's the guy at the other end of the assist knocking down the shot. Eric Gordon right now is getting it done. Not getting it done. Got to give one to San Antonio Spurs forward LaMarcus Aldridge. Look at the tail of LaMarcus Aldridge right now in the playoffs. In two Spurs wins against the Rockets, he averaged 20 points a game. 8 rebounds a game. In 2 losses against the Rockets, he averaged 10 points a game and 5 rebounds a game. Now, I'm not a big math guy, and I was told back when I started the Daily Dose, no math required for this job. But I'm just doing a little bit of math. Let's see, 20 and 10 and then 8 and 5. Yeah, if the Spurs want to advance past the Rockets, LaMarcus Aldridge, you're going to have to step up, or else they don't have a shot. They have no chance if Aldridge doesn't step up and play big minutes. And if Aldridge doesn't step up and play big minutes in these last few games, is he done in San Antonio? I mean, do you just go somewhere else? Give that money to someone else? Would that be the end of his run there? I don't know. But San Antonio desperately needs Aldridge to step up if they want to have a chance of getting past Houston. I still think San Antonio's okay. Remember, Game 7 would be played in San Antonio. That should help them immensely. I'm going to give a getting it done, of course. I have to. And yes, after games 3 and 4, makes you take a step back a little bit, but I've got to give one to Boston Celtics guard Isaiah Thomas. I know he's cooled off a little bit, but considering all the emotional stuff that Isaiah Thomas was dealing with the loss of his sister, getting his teeth knocked out, all the whole thing that was going on when this series started, the fact that Isaiah Thomas is like the same size as your grandma, and the fact that he's still averaging 30 points per game in this series is absolutely remarkable. Isaiah Thomas does play much, much better at home. And again, a deciding game would be played in Boston Garden. Isaiah Thomas, He is amazing to watch. I realize he can't play defense, but man, you want to talk about coming up with a clutch shot that is a difficulty factor of like 9.9 when you have to have it. Isaiah Thomas seems to come through every single time. You just can't stay in front of him. Yes, he probably carries the ball a little on his crossover. Isaiah Thomas, pretty amazing to watch. He's definitely been getting it done. I'm going to give a not getting it done to Washington Wizards forward Kelly Oubre's brain. Okay, for one, Kelly Oubre has been terrible in the series. He is currently a minus 19 when he's on the floor. Let me explain to you what that means if you don't know. I know, I have smart listeners. You probably don't need this explained. I'll explain it to those of you who might not know. When you are on the floor, they track how your team does. So let's say you play for 5 minutes. How did your team do in that 5 minutes you played? Maybe you scored 7 points. The other team scored 5 points. You would be a plus two. Maybe your team scored, and it's as a team. Maybe your team only scored 3 points. The other team scored 12 points. You'd be a minus nine. When Kelly Oubre has been on the floor for the Washington Wizards, and he's played a lot of minutes through three games until he got suspended, he was a minus 19. That's amazing. But the thing that I notice when I watch him, one, he's always open. He's always open because Boston is like, leave him open. He can't hurt us. Remember, a lot of times in basketball, you're open because the opposing team wants you to be open. They want you to shoot it. They're hoping you shoot it. And he takes the shot and he misses it. So he doesn't do anything with the ball when he does get the ball. And then his defense has been absolutely horrible. Then in game three, he got mad at Boston Celtic Kelly Olynyk on a screen that he considered dirty. I guess we could discuss whether or not it was dirty. It was a little high. The elbow came out a little bit. It wasn't a filthy screen. Not at all. Back in the 80s, it would have been considered a really, really clean screen. But for whatever reason, Kelly Oubre's brain wasn't working quite right that day. He got mad, went and threw Olynyk to the ground, got ejected, and got suspended. That's the bad news. Here's the good news if you're a Washington Wizards fan. He's out. When you're a minus 19, I want you out. I don't want you playing. The Wizards won game four without him. They should probably just leave him out the rest of the series. Because Kelly Oubre's brain is not getting it done right now in the NBA playoffs. Let's give a getting it done. Gotta be LeBron James shooting. You know, it seems like, and I don't know what it is, but it seems like every year, right about playoff time, we start asking, what in the world is LeBron James' shot doing? Like, he's shooting different. He's standing, he's got his feet and he's putting his hand a little, he's always messing with his shot. He starts tweaking it. I don't know if he looks at it in the mirror. I don't know what he does. Right around playoff time, it seems like he kind of starts tweaking his shot, kind of messing around. I don't know if he gets bored. I don't know if he's just that insecure. That's what always struck me. If I was coaching a kid and he was always messing with his shot and tweaking his shot, it always struck me as he was an insecure kid about his shot. But that has not been the case in the playoffs so far this season. LeBron is shooting it and shooting it well. Whatever he has done up to this point to fix his shot, this year it's working. You know, he shot over 58% from the field against Toronto. That's almost 60% from the field. I realize a lot of his shots are at the basket, but he shot almost 50% from three-point range. And even his free throws, which have been inconsistent all season. And as we were going into the playoffs, you're kind of looking at LeBron's free throws going, dude, you're going to cost this team a game at some point because you've been inconsistent shooting free throws. Even his free throws were good against the Raptors. He shot 85% from the line. He shot just 67% during the season. As long as LeBron James shoots it like this, I'm telling you right now, nobody in the East can touch the Cavaliers when he shoots it that well, especially from distance. Because we know, if he really wants to get to the basket, he doesn't always. He shies away from that a lot of times. But if he really wants to get to the basket and you're having to play his outside shot, honestly, he can get to the basket. As long as he's shooting that well, you're going to have a tough time keeping him away from the basket. It just makes him that much more dangerous. Let's give a not getting it done, though, to the team that LeBron James faced in this last round of the playoffs. Because the Toronto Raptors, I mean, just the entire team. The entire team, top to bottom, the Toronto Raptors did not get anything done. They gave up 116 points per game, and I'll say the worst thing you can say about a team. They looked soft, and they quit. There's nothing worse. There's nothing worse as a coach you could hear than those words. You looked soft and you quit. Oh, that just ripped your guts out when you hear that as a coach. But the Toronto Raptors allowed Cleveland to shoot 50% from the field, and they got out rebounded on average 52 to 44. Hey, look, I realize Cleveland is a more talented team. Rebounding is mostly just effort, though. Defending can be effort. I realize that the Toronto Raptors are flawed, and they are a flawed team. When you look at the way they've been built around Kyle Lowry, who always seems to be hurt, who always seems to be streaky. You're not sure if he's going to be hot tonight. Probably not, but I hope so. And then you've got DeMar DeRozan, who is bizarrely a guy who takes highly difficult shots and a lot of times makes them, but can't shoot the three. Like, if you watch DeMar DeRozan, he takes these crazy falling away, flipping the ball up, like Kobe Bryant kind of shots. They go in. But if you just sag off of him and force him to shoot the three, he can't consistently hit it. So just the building of this team has kind of been flawed. But to watch the way the Toronto Raptors have gone out in these playoffs and just not even really competed against Cleveland, that's disappointing. We talked about this prior to the playoffs. And I said, here are a couple teams that can compete with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I said then, I don't think Toronto is one of them. They weren't on my list. I didn't think it would be this bad. I didn't think they wouldn't even kind of compete. This has been painful to watch. The Toronto Raptors have definitely not got it done. I'm going to give you one more getting it done. Golden State Warriors forward Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant was playing beginning of the season. The Warriors looked unstoppable. They were rolling through everyone. Then he had the injury to the knee. He was gone. And let's be honest, the Warriors kind of lost that mojo. They were funky. They looked awful. We said then, might be a good thing for him because they might figure some things out. Return to the way they used to play. They finally did. They got it back. Klay Thompson started playing better. Steph Curry really started playing better. Draymond Green, he's just Draymond Green. He kind of does what he does. But the Warriors kind of got it back. And then Kevin Durant returned, and of course the talking heads on the sports network said, now how is this going to affect the Warriors? Are they going to regress back? No, they're not. You added another all-star stud to the mix. They're not going to get worse. KD has come back, and he has been dominating. Kevin Durant, in the series against the Utah Jazz, and the Utah Jazz, I think they're a little bit better team than people think, and they're certainly a better team than they have shown against the Golden State Warriors. Kevin Durant is averaging 27 points a game and 9 rebounds a game. No, he's fine. He's just fine. And you know what else? The Golden State Warriors are fine with him back. They look like they are just hitting their stride right now. That is bad news for the rest of the league. Finally, our last not getting it done in the NBA playoffs. It's got to be close games. You know, the average margin of victory in the conference semifinals so far in this second round of the playoffs has been 16 points per game on average. No better example than the San Antonio-Houston series. Game one, Houston blows them out. Game two, San Antonio blows them out. Game three, San Antonio blows them out again. Game four, Houston blows them out. I don't even want to watch these games. They're boring. They're not fun. They're not exciting. I'm really hoping that this last stretch of this round gets better and then that the conference finals are halfway watchable. I don't think they're going to be. Honestly, can we just put Golden State and Cleveland in the finals already? We're just holding off the inevitable. That is what's coming. That is what's going to happen. Aren't we just kind of killing time in the meantime? So far, close games, not getting it done because we haven't seen very many of them. Hey, just a reminder, be sure that you head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose to do any shopping that you might need to do. You may need to pick up a gift for somebody. You may just want to go buy something for yourself. That's okay. We're not going to judge you. Loot Crate, of course, delivers the best merchandise and collectibles that feature your favorite TV shows, movies, and video games. You can go get a crate. If you want to just get one crate, you can go just get one crate. You just sign up for a subscription of 1 month, get that crate, and then you end your subscription. It's very simple. If you want a subscription of crates and you want them to keep coming, you can do that. Or you can just go to Loot Crate and order individual items. You see a shirt you like, you see a hoodie you like, maybe there's a hat, maybe there's a figurine or a coffee mug, even stuff for your pets. They've got it all over there. This month's crate is called Guardians. It features all sorts of items from Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Star Wars, Destiny, Goonies, and much, much more. And you know, you can always go back and order past crates or past items from crates as long as they're available. The best part about ordering, when you place your order at checkout, put Daily Dose in the coupon box, DALYDOSE, you'll get 10% off your order. We don't keep any of that money from Loot Crate. We forward anything we get to the Billy Best Lacrosse Fund. It helps some kids get involved in sports. So go place your order at Loot Crate, get some cool gear, and know in the back of your mind, you're helping some kids get involved in sports, and that is a very, very good thing. Now, as we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. So on Saturday night, Canelo Alvarez completely outclassed Julio Chavez Jr., won a unanimous decision in a boring fight that wasn't very good. Look, Julio Chavez Jr. has never been a quality fighter. And when I say that, you might think, well, he's been a little below average. No, that's not what I mean. That's not what I mean. I mean, he sucks, and he's been living off his dad's name literally his entire boxing career. He had no business whatsoever being in the ring against Canelo Alvarez. But here's the thing. Said it before, and I'll say it again. Boxing is completely idiotic. And in that sport, the inmates run the prison. So instead of making Canelo fight someone like Gennady Golovkin like 3 years ago, which is what should have happened, Canelo has been ducking Triple G and fighting literally anyone else so he didn't have to get in the ring with Gennady Golovkin. In boxing, they sort of make some rules that you kind of have to fight who we say to fight, but they don't really care. Boxing has no true ruling federation, so do whatever you want. Because boxing is a complete disaster, which honestly is why it is going the way of the Edsel, or, you know, like ESPN. About once every 5 years, there's a decent fight that we all watch, and then boxing goes back into its outdated moronic cave, unless you're just an idiot that, you know, watches all these fights like a complete moron. Like, you know, me. I know. Again, stop judging me. Yes, I still watch boxing. Yes, I'm stupid. I admit it. That's the first step to recovery, isn't it? Admitting it? I admit it. I still watch it. I grew up watching great fights, and I always just want a return to some of those great fights. Anyway, following that debacle of a fight between Alvarez and Chavez, it was announced that Canelo Alvarez will finally fight Gennady Golovkin. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that's like 3 years a little too late. And see, this isn't the first time this has happened. There have been a bunch of fights that we wanted to see take place. Now, I'm not talking about fantasy fights. I would love to have seen Joe Lewis fight Muhammad Ali with them both being in their prime. That would have been phenomenal. I'd love to see who would win that. I have my idea of what might have happened, but I would have loved to have seen that. I'm not talking about that. I would love to see like Floyd Mayweather fight Sugar Ray Robinson. I'm not talking about that. Those are fantasy fights. Those couldn't have ever happened. I'm talking about fights that actually should have happened, but both sides refused to get in the ring, and so they never took place. And that might be one of the things that annoys so many people about boxing, and that is honestly where MMA is crushing boxing right now. If there are two fighters that they want to see in MMA, they get them in the ring and they fight. That doesn't happen in boxing, and honestly, it hasn't for years. So with all of that in mind, today, we give you our Daily Dose Top 5 fights we wish would have happened. There's been a number of them. There's been a few fights. Even at the time, we were saying, oh, why don't they make this fight happen? Why don't they go out and put this fight together? Never happened. Now, Golovkin, Canelo, gonna get in the ring. Should be interesting as we get closer to the fight. That fight is supposed to be in September. Might have to break that down a little bit. I might actually have to watch that. Might be worth seeing. It would be better than seeing Floyd Mayweather get in the ring with some MMA fighter. Has to be better than that. If that fight happens, it needs to take place in a circus tent. Okay, anyways, let's get to the top five fights we wish would have happened. Number five on our list. Of course, you know, the 1970s, they were a golden age in the heavyweight division. You had George Foreman, you had Joe Frazier, you had Muhammad Ali, you had Ken Norton. You started to get Larry Holmes in at the end of that. This would have been a great fight. Because in his prime, these were the only two men that had ever beaten Muhammad Ali. But Joe Frazier and Ken Norton had both been beaten badly by George Foreman. And this fight could have been the perfect fight to get back on track. The only problem was, Ken Norton was kind of viewed as a young kid. He hadn't really accomplished anything yet. He's not really up to par with Smoke and Joe Frazier. So he just didn't have the star power yet. Little did we know at the time, Ken Norton would go on to be 42-7-1. Now, the interesting thing, Joe Frazier and Ken Norton had sparred numerous times, and they shared the same manager in Eddie Futch. So this would have been a well-matched war. Personally, I think Frazier probably smothers Norton, gone to his body, taken away that reach advantage of Norton, but that would have been a great fight in the heavyweight class, and we never saw it. Because that's just how boxing is. Sometimes the fights we wish would happen don't happen. That's number five. Number four on our list. You know, Aaron Pryor might have been the greatest light welterweight fighter ever. But the biggest fights of the era that he fought in were happening up at 147. You had Sugar Ray Leonard. You had Tommy Hearns. You had Marvin Hagler. You had Roberto Duran. They all fought at some point at welterweight. But people forget that Aaron Pryor actually beat Tommy Hearns as an amateur, and he was a dominating fighter. Aaron Pryor finished his career at 39-1. He was actually going to fight Sugar Ray Leonard in 1982, which would have been a phenomenal fight. We would have loved to have seen it. All that had to happen for this to take place was that Sugar Ray Leonard had to just beat the mandatory challenger, Roger Stafford. Of course, if you remember, in that fight, Sugar Ray Leonard suffered a detached retina and had to retire. Now, Aaron Pryor versus Sugar Ray Leonard might have been a great fight. Those two had sparred, and you know, the rumor was Pryor gave Ray Leonard some real big problems. I think Leonard would have won the fight. Pryor would have been a much smaller fighter, but Aaron Pryor was fearless. Wasn't really anyone's fault, but when Leonard suffered the detached retina, Sugar Ray Leonard versus Aaron Pryor fell through. We never got to see that fight. Number three on this list, I'll be honest, I'm not sure it would have been a great fight, but it would have been an interesting fight because I still would have liked to see Mike Tyson fight George Foreman. You know, Tyson had been beaten by Buster Douglas, and so his promoters didn't want to get him back in the ring against the likes of like an Evander Holyfield. That was way too dangerous. So they were looking for a lesser fighter, and Foreman was past his prime. He was like 42 years old. He was trying to make a comeback. But they say Tyson didn't want to fight George. And while many feel like Tyson would have knocked the old man out and got back on track, I'll be honest, I'm not so sure. George Foreman was absolutely built for Mike Tyson. Tyson might have struggled a little bit with the old man's strength. Instead, Tyson went and fought Henry Tillman and Alex Stewart, a couple of tomato cans that honestly had no business even being in the ring with him. And then, yeah, he ended up going to jail for rape. Delayed the process even longer. Once he did got out, he didn't want anything to do with George. You were starting to see that George Foreman was back and he could still, you know, hit like a ton of bricks. So Tyson didn't want him in. And probably with good reason. But I think prior to all that stuff going on, Tyson versus Foreman, like I said, might not have been a great fight, but it would have been an interesting fight. Number two on our list. You know, in 1978, Alexis Arguello won the super featherweight championship, and he was in the process of moving up to lightweight because he wanted to go after reigning champ, Roberto Duran. Unfortunately, he lost a majority decision to Vladimir Fernandez, a little bit better than average fighter, but certainly not in the class of Roberto Duran. In fact, Duran had actually knocked him out back in 1977. But if Alexis Arguello could have beaten Fernandez, he may have had a chance to fight Roberto Duran. Now, if he couldn't beat Fernandez, could he have stood any kind of a chance in the ring with El Cholo? Maybe not. So the fight never happened. But Arguello went on to be 77-8 as a fighter. He knocked out Aaron Pryor, and he could punch. I know he would have been a little bit smaller. He could punch. He had heavy hands. I imagine Roberto Duran would have beat him. I guarantee Alexis Arguello would not have gone away easily. That would have been a great fight that I wish we could have seen. Boxing does this to us. They hold us hostage. So what could be number one on our list of fights we wish would have happened? What else? Floyd Mayweather versus Manny Pacquiao. What? Oh, I know. We saw this fight in 2015. Yeah, except that it was about 6 years too late. And it wasn't a good fight, and neither fighter was in their prime by the time they actually got in the ring. Instead of a 28-year-old Manny Pacquiao, We got a 37-year-old Manny Pacquiao that had already been beat by Timothy Bradley. Yes, yes, in a horrible decision. But had also been knocked out cold by Juan Manuel Marquez. And we also got a 38-year-old Floyd Mayweather. Not exactly the same as it would have been 8-9 years previous. Honestly, maybe it doesn't make any difference because Floyd Mayweather is a slick fighter. Well, he was. But I still would have liked to have seen Manny Pacquiao fighting him at the top of his game. Unfortunately, in the world of boxing, there's always this feeling of what might have been. And these five fights here are some of the biggest examples of that. Let's hope that Canelo Alvarez versus Gennady Golovkin somehow lives up to the hype that we know is going to be coming. But let's be honest, the bottom line is that this fight should have happened a few years ago. Just doesn't happen when you're dealing in the world of boxing. Hey, next week on the show, we will be discussing NBA playoffs, should be getting down to the conference finals. Stanley Cup playoffs are also getting further, and they'll be down to the conference finals as well. The NFL is always in the news. You always know we're going to be talking some NFL. And of course, we have to talk a little bit of Major League Baseball. As you saw this week, you have to make sure that you stick around for the Daily Dose Top 5 because you never know which direction that's going to go. Hey, if you get a chance, please go wherever it is that you download the show. Click that subscribe or follow button. We would appreciate that so much. Just gets us seen by a few more people. And if you follow us on blogtalkradio.com, you do get the episodes a little bit quicker than everyone else does. Feel free to click share. Send the show to someone that might like it. That helps us too. Feel free to contact us with what's on your mind by emailing us at dailydosesports@gmail.com. Or look for us on Facebook or Twitter. Make sure you do any shopping that you might need to do over at lootcrate.com/dailydose. And if you enter Daily Dose into the coupon box at checkout, you will get 10% off your order. Have to say thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you being here with us on the Daily Dose every single week. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next week.